Do you think there's a mental framework to help people get better?
So I'll tell you how I lived my whole life. So like,
you think the guys that build a $1 trillion company work harder than a $1 billion?
No.
Okay. So what do you think is the difference?
How do you get comfortable with risk?
I think it's taking risk but protecting the downside.
What's your dream?
It's to give everyone access to opportunities.
Maybe sort of world peace.
We need to change how society works.
My dream is to live in a world where young people can build the personal development skills that they need to go and become the best version of themselves.
I've always had a dream to maybe live like Bali or somewhere.
Open my own business.
Start my own business.
To become an actor.
To own a cakery storefront in Central London.
Like the guy I'm trying to... Whoa!
Got a dream.
Okay, mate. What's your dream?
So my dream is to fix the education system so that people know that they can do anything and then have the tools to do anything.
Where did it start? Where did the inspiration come from to start the What's Your Dream sort of movement and now brand?
Yeah, so I...
Meet Simon Squibb, entrepreneur, investor, and the man on a mission to make entrepreneurship for everyone.
From starting with nothing to building and selling companies worth millions.
Now he's giving back, sharing knowledge, funding ideas, and inspiring a new generation of founders.
My mum basically kicked me out of home. I find it fascinating how people have these belief systems that stop them following their dreams. I need money to start a business. I just know that that's not true because I've lived that life. I started a business when I was homeless. How that subconscious stuff has got people trapped, and I love breaking people free from it. It's not their fault. It's what they've been told is true.
Where do you feel like the school system is lacking and breaking down?
So I have a lot to say on this subject. I think the simple version of why the school system is broken starts at.
What would you say somebody right now is on their way to a job that they hate, they're trapped, they are in fight or flight, they're feeling like they have no options?
I have so much respect for someone who perhaps going out there doing a job they hate to provide for their family. A lot of the time we make ourselves a martyr and we say this is the way it has to be, but it's not true. You can enjoy your work. Enjoying what you do should also link to having financial freedom. Figure out something you'd love to try and do because you don't want to live with regret later in life.
Welcome to this very special episode of Unemployable. Today, we are joined with the one and only Simon Squibb. He is one of the most famous influencers on the planet in the area of self-improvement and speaking hope and inspiration into people's lives. You might have seen him as the guy that goes up to people on the street and says, "What's your dream?" And right there on the spot gets to the heart of why people are not pursuing their passions, the lives that they want. And he's grown to an enormous social media following of nearly 17 million people worldwide. He's worked with people like Richard Branson, Mr. Beast, and he is proof that being an incredibly kind and good person and financial success are not mutually exclusive. In this interview, we dive into how he started as a homeless boy on the streets, made his way from there, knocking on somebody's door and, you know, helping them, you know, tidy up their garden to selling a business for more money than he would need to live the rest of his life. And now he dedicates his life and his time to helping people find their passion. We went through so many inspirational and super practical strategies for you. If you feel trapped, if you feel like you don't know where you're going, you feel like you want to do something else, you've got this dream, but you don't know the first step or what's holding you back, this is the podcast for you. I got so much out of it. Eric got so much out of it, and we know you will too. He's going to be in Australia and New Zealand in November. Click on the link around this video to get yourself in the room with Simon. In this podcast, he says, be around people on a mission and have a vision, and it will change you, and you'll see what it feels like. This is your chance. So click on the link, get in the room. Tickets are super cheap. This is an incredible opportunity to be around one of the world's best inspiring leaders. With that said, enjoy the pod. If you haven't already, like, subscribe, and engage in the comments. Let's get into it. All right. Welcome to the podcast. I have a question for you, Mr. Simon Squibb, and you can probably guess what it is. What is your dream? Let's hear it from you.
Wow. So my dream is to fix the education system so that people know that they can do anything and then have the tools to do anything. Because opportunity, it turns out, is everywhere, but not everyone has access to it. And I feel like talent is equally distributed, but opportunity is not easily accessible to many people. And I want to change that. I want to help people realize their dream, go for their dreams, and not have any limitations that I believe the school system might have put on them.
Hmm. So let's frame you up for the people who may not somehow have seen you online and seen your street activism for entrepreneurship and people building. Well, basically, you walk up to people and ask them that very direct personal question. So tell us a little bit about your story on this mission. Like, where did it start? Where did the inspiration come from to start the What's Your Dream sort of movement and now brand? And where is it at today and so on?
Yeah, so I grew up in a small town in England called St. Neots, and I had a family of three brothers, a mother and a father, and I guess I grew up in a middle-class kind of lifestyle setting. I didn't know what rich was or what poor was. I didn't know if my parents were rich or poor. I didn't know any of those sorts of things when I was younger. Anyway, fast forward to 15 years old, my father sadly suddenly died of a heart attack right in front of me. And of course, as you'd expect, quite a shocking thing to have happen. Your father's there one minute, he's gone the next. And the family just became chaos and sad, and everyone crying all the time. And of course, as you'd expect, distress. And then my mother and I had an argument, a big argument, about 3 weeks after my father died. And my mum basically kicked me out of home. And she two stubborn people, if I look back now, you know, disagreeing. She told me to get out. I took her word and I never went back. And I spent the next 8 weeks basically homeless. And I stayed on a friend's couch in their garage. I slept in a park. I slept in the street with lots of other homeless people who turned out to be some of the kindest humans on the planet. You know, I'd walk past homeless people as a kid and almost my mum pulling me away from them as if they're scary humans. And it turns out, you know, my experience when I was homeless was some of the nicest, kindest, generous people I've ever met, giving me a blanket that meant they would be less warm to help me be warm. And then a lot of crazy stuff happened. I basically describe what happened to me next as I tried begging to make money. That didn't work for me. Got called a drug addict and someone spat in my face and just like, this, I can't do this. And then I went to social services to get help. And they told me that there's three people in front of me that have babies, so I'm not the priority, which made sense to me at the time, by the way, even though I was 15 years old and desperate. But like, someone with a baby needs help more than I need help. So they told me to go away, basically. And then I tried to get a job. But in England, at 15, you can't get a job without a national insurance number. You need a number, which I didn't have until you're 16. And I didn't have an address, so I couldn't get a job. So basically, I was forced to wake up the entrepreneur muscle in my brain. And I was so desperate to figure out a way out of this situation. One day I'm walking past this big house, beautiful big house. I remember it like it was yesterday. And my brain said to me, well, that's a really nice, valuable house. And then I looked at the garden and the garden was really messy, weeds growing, crap everywhere. And my brain then also spoke to me and said, well, that's a messy garden. Why has someone got a nice house, got such a messy garden? And then my brain said, well, maybe they'll pay you to tidy up their garden. So with no gardening experience, no gardening equipment, and no sales experience or business knowledge, I walked up the drive, I knocked on the door and I said, my name's Simon Squibb. I'm starting a gardening company and I wondered if I could take care of your garden. And the guy that answered basically just said, yeah, all right. How much? And I just picked a number out of thin air. I said, £200 a month. Now, I was very lucky I said a monthly fee, by the way. That's another point for another day. And that was it. I basically had a client and I suddenly had a gardening company, and £200 was a lot of money to me at that moment. And so
What's your dream? What is your purpose in life? What is your mission? My mission is to help you find it, to help you figure out your dream, to help you make it actually happen, because they don't teach you what you need to know at school. They don't teach you what you need to know when you work for someone else. They want you to not know how to make your dream happen. And that's why I'm coming to Australia and New Zealand to share with you what I've learned. But it won't be my knowledge that I give you that will change your life. What it will actually give you will be community. Because how we make things work is by working together. There is no self-made multimillionaire. I'm not self-made. No one successful is. We do it by helping each other. And I will teach you what I know about community, what I know about social media, and what I've learned in 35 years on doing business, going from homeless to where I am today. I know what it takes to be successful, and it cannot be done on your own. So at this event, not only will I give you the knowledge that I have, you'll have a community around you that also dream, people that can help you make your dream a reality, because 1 + 1 = 11. If you want to be a part of this, tickets are now on sale, but don't look at it as a cost. You've got to invest in yourself, or you spend a little bit of money connecting to the people that have the same passion as you. If you want to invest in yourself, this is a good time to do it. I'll see you there, and together, as dreamers, we'll make your dream a reality.
I was like, shook his hand, walked down the drive thinking, okay, I'm going to come back tomorrow and somehow sort this garden out. And then long story short, of course, I didn't have any gardening equipment. So then I had to go knock on more doors to get more people to say yes, to even, you know, be able to afford the gardening equipment. Realized I needed to get a deposit from all these people that had said yes. So I had some instant cash flow. None of this was taught to me, or had no choice if I wanted to make it work type stuff, right? Fast forward, a few years ago, I built a company called Fluid out in Asia, which I sold to PricewaterhouseCooper, and I never need to work again a day in my life. I retired at 40, and I sat back and thought, okay, this is it, I've made it. And then slowly I realized that I have a mission, and that is to fix the education system that let me down so badly at 15 when I left school, and to help the 15-year-old me start a business of their own. And so that's what I'm doing now. I sold my company, and then I've started building out this platform, which is basically hopefully going to help people follow their dreams. So far, so good. And we get 500 million views a month, 17 million followers. We get more views than the BBC on our content. And we're just trying to help people realize that they can do anything. A bit like that 15-year-old me who didn't realize he could do anything, but somehow did anything, traveled the world, built businesses, had the most amazing life. And all because I learned entrepreneurship. And I don't think it's taught at schools. And it's a mistake. And I don't think we're giving people agency over their lives. We're not giving people control over their time, because we're not giving people the education that they deserve. And I intend to change that.
It's fascinating watching your content, because, you know, I think you really have got to have lived the life that you've lived, in terms of, you've been an entrepreneur. You know what it is to walk up to a door cold and ask somebody to hire you. You know what it is to overcome just the most practical problems in front of you when you've had no choice but to do it for survival. And it's so evident in the way that you interview people. It's just straight to the excuse, and you pull these excuses away and say, now what? And it's like you can see this moment of panic. Like, what has it been your journey in learning that, like that method of just connecting and immediately connecting them to action and revealing that thing, the truth behind the excuse? What led you to that, knowing that it was just a, you know, because it looks easy when you do it in a few seconds, but it's profound when you just pull away the veil and reveal the truth of where they are. What have you found there?
I think people are trapped in their subconscious belief systems. So, you know, people grow up. When they're young, they hear, oh, starting a business is dangerous. Oh, yeah, 90% of businesses fail, which is not true. But people hear all these things, and our subconscious is very powerful. It allows us to breathe right now. We're blinking, we're doing loads of things subconsciously. That's how we survive. But our subconscious, particularly between the ages of 0 and 7, absorbs so much knowledge. And it absorbs ways to survive in the real world. That's why people get scared of spiders, for example. Often they had a little experience when they were young. Spider was in the bath, and then they're scared of spiders. And they don't know why, because a spider's tiny. They shouldn't be. But it sinks into the subconscious that spiders are dangerous. There's so many other things that slip into people's subconscious that stop them following their dreams. And so I found it fascinating. I think if I was to be reborn, I'd probably come back as a psychiatrist. I find it fascinating how people have these belief systems that stop them following their dreams. And so every time I hear a statement like, I need money to start a business, I just know that that's not true, because I've lived that life. I started a business when I was homeless. I had less than no money, you know, like I didn't have a bank account to keep money in, you know, like it's so crazy to me. how that subconscious stuff has got people trapped. And I love breaking people free from it. And so sometimes when people make excuses, it's not their fault. It's what they've been told is true. Like, you need money to start a business. We've watched Shark Tank. You've watched Dragon's Den. You think the only way to make your business work is some guy or girl's going to give you a load of cash. And it's not true. Most service businesses, nearly all service businesses, can be started with no money. If you understand the different types of businesses, then you can understand the different business models. Then you can understand how some businesses, yes, need money, but you can build a service company to make profit, use that profit to build a company that needs investment, for example.
Sorry, didn't see you there. While you're here, actually, we've got a new coaching cohort that just opened up for the Unemployable Property Coaching Program that you get taught on how to become a property developer. One-on-one coaching, bi-monthly coaching, and also events where we get a full coach bus with all the students and go to 6-7 different development sites. When I say development sites, from one lot to 10 lots to 50 lots, you get to see exactly why we buy it, how we buy it, how we fund it, and also how you can do it yourself. The next day, we had an amazing event at the QT Hotel here on the Gold Coast where we had all of our consultants come in and teach everybody on what they're looking for with sites, what are the different trends, and how you can become a property developer yourself. Now you see me on the video, but who you're gonna be getting coached by is Shannon and Carson. Who's Shannon and Carson? 4 years ago, Carson was cleaning carpets. Shannon was a machine operator. Today, they're doing over $100 million worth of land deals. I know you're listening, and I know you want to take action. And if that's you, click on the link below or go to www.unemployablepropertycom.au and register your interest, and one of our team will reach out to you, and we'll see you on the next bus. Now get out of here.
And so I just find that the excuses that people tell me, I'm pretty much probably went through my whole life having no choice but to ignore my excuses in my subconscious. And because I had no choice but to ignore, I've learned how to overcome them. And now I try to help people overcome their own subconscious self-sabotage.
Eric, I'm going to get you to ask a question in a minute. I've got one more question I want to ask before I hand you over to ask one. But have you got a favorite story, Simon, of somebody that you walked up to on a street? I mean, I'm sure you've got a collection of them now, that was just going about their day, and then Simon Squibb rocks up with the little mic and says, "What's your dream?" And they've come back to you sometime later, and that little discussion, that I always say, never underestimate the power of the right words to a willing heart and mind at the right moment. Is there any magical moments like that that have just, you've met somebody and then it was, you were the sort of genesis spark in their world that you want to share?
So, you know, what's really fascinating about this whole process is that, you know, I ask people their dreams and I put that dream up online and I promote those people for free. And in some cases, I give them money. They don't always need money. And I think what's actually blown my mind is when I started this, I really did it as a survey. I wanted to find out what was stopping people so I could make content on YouTube and other channels, educational knowledge to help people remove those excuses. Right, because we're also hearing gurus all the time, like go for it, work hard, hustle. But some people just don't even know where to begin, right? So my original thinking was that I want to ask people this question to find out what their motivations are, and what problems are stopping them from going ahead and doing it, so I could make content for that and help them overcome it. And then what's happened that's blown my mind is, and when you ask that question, is there's so many moments where people blow my mind, going from having no dream to discovering it in 2 minutes. Going from believing their dream is not possible to deciding they're going to do it in 2 minutes. You know, and a good example is a lady called Catalina who, I always say her name wrong because I'm dyslexic. Caitlin, she's probably going to be listening. She's going to hate me getting her name wrong. Caitlin, and she started something called Rocks Queen. And, you know, it was 10 o'clock at night on the Millennium Bridge in London. And, you know, I asked her a dream. She's like, I'm going to buy a house, I think. And then she basically woke up. I saw it in her eyes. She's like, but I would love to travel. I'd love to do this healthy concept called a Rocks Queen that I've got. I'm like, go to Bali. I'm like, do it. Why not do it? She's like, oh, but, you know, I don't know if I can. She's done it. She recently just got a partnership with Nike. She's made it happen. She created it from that moment where she was about to get into debt in a mortgage. She wasn't sure she could do it, to having done it. Now, I highlight her as just one of the many stories. I think we've got thousands at this point of people that have done it like that. There are also thousands of people that have failed. And I think there's nothing wrong with that. People have tried and it hasn't worked. That's very important to highlight those too. I think failure is a good experience too, despite it being banned, packaged up as something bad. But I sometimes like also to highlight the failures that I've had and that people have. Not every single one's going to work out, but we have the experience. You don't live with regret. That's the key. But the thing I'd just like to quickly highlight on this, the thing that's blown my mind the most has been the people that watch the videos. So Caitlin's video, I think last time I looked, had 64 million views. Now, I know, because I see the DMs every day, people that have watched that video and gone, you know what? I'm not going for my dream. And then they've gone and done it. I don't know them. They don't know me. They just watched that video and taken action. And now they're asking themselves for the first time in their life what their dream is. This was never asked of them at school. Their parents never asked them. It's always, what will you do when you grow up? It's not what's your dream. It's what will you do when you grow up? Trapping people in a job on a treadmill to go and do a certain thing. And it's the people that have watched the videos that have messaged me and said, 2 years ago, Simon, I watched one of your videos and now I'm following my dream. You know, that's what I get really excited about, because that is beyond the one person in the video. Again, like, there's people in my videos that have gone on to fail. They tried to make their dream work and it hasn't worked for whatever reason. I think it's important to talk about those too, because this isn't, I've never said this was an easy journey or that it wasn't going to be difficult to make it happen. Of course it is, right? Not every success is a straight up line. But I think that, you know, for me, Caitlin stands out, and I do think that there's people out there that have watched the videos where they've gone and made it happen. And I know there's thousands of people that have done that.
It's amazing, you know, because I relate to that. We started this podcast maybe 22 months ago. Adam and I thought, you know what, it's a good idea. Let's start a podcast. There's many smart people around the world that are doing the same, and where we're doing it on a lot smaller level than you are. And we're starting to get those messages, right? Obviously the word unemployable speaks for itself. And yeah, appreciate everything that you're doing, because you're helping millions of people out there, and we're helping thousands. But you have a lot of core beliefs, right? And one of them that you have is, you mentioned that scarcity is an asset. And I talk about scarcity a lot. I talk about scarcity mindset with people, because I was born in a family that with a very scarce mindset, right? Like, it was, money was hard to come by. You had to work hard, and that was that. Now, what do you mean by scarcity as an asset, and how can people use that to their advantage? Because I feel that a lot of people are in that headspace.
Well, look, I mean, the ironic thing is, money, for example, is not scarce. It's literally just printed when there's more of it needed. There's just so much money out there. It's crazy. You know, like, I think the opposite is true. People need to believe in things. They need to believe in themselves, and they need to believe that there is a lot of abundance out there. But you're right. Most people are living a life of scarcity. They're like, I don't have enough money to start a business, for example. That's a very common, you know, subconscious belief. We're like, well, you don't need money to start a business. I'm like, I do, don't I? And I think this waking people up to this abundance that exists is something I'm really passionate about. And so even the abundance of, like, well, humans are good, because all the headlines are this bad person, that bad person. But actually, my experience of humanity is that humans are really nice and caring. Most people are in the middle of the road. They don't want wars. They want to be friends with their neighbors. They want to help people. You know, that's my experience of people. So I think, yeah, I think my thing about scarcity, one thing I will say is, though, an example would be, if you post on LinkedIn today and then you post on LinkedIn tomorrow, so you make a post about your business or your idea or your dream, or you'll be in the top 1% of people that posted 2 days in a row. So people don't realize, like, I'm on TikTok and people are like, oh, it's too late now. You know, everyone, TikTok's happened and everyone's on it. And no, post today, start today. Like, people just assume, podcasts, for example, oh, there's too many podcasts, so I won't do a podcast. But most podcasts don't go past like 9 episodes before they stop. Okay, people shut them down. So yeah, there might be a lot of podcasts, but not many people are following through. And so that whole mindset of like, you know, be persistent, be consistent, believe, manifest. I love the word manifest. When I was younger, if you said the word manifest, I would have gone, oh, that's a bit woo-woo. Now I'm like, you can make it real. You can make an idea in your head and you can make it real. It's a fact. This computer we're all on right now in your head. People listening to this podcast, whatever device you're on, it was once in someone's head and they made it real. Okay. So if you're listening on an iPhone, I actually interviewed the founder of the guy that actually created the iPhone, Tony Fadell. He had it in his mind's eye. He made it real. He presented it to Steve Jobs. Steve Jobs bought his company. Great. Right. The point I'm making is that everything is possible in your mind to make real. So manifestation is just an extended version of that. So I think if people think there's abundance, there will be. If people are persistent and believe something's possible, it will happen.
I think, Simon, the other thing that sort of strikes me is that there's a common belief that, you know, especially in Australia at the moment, that the generation, millennials, whatever they are, the younger people, you know, there's no hope for them now. It's all the old people that had all the opportunities and not for us. And I look at like your story and others like you, where we have this thing in our hand called an iPhone or a smartphone. And I look at what you've done. You've literally built an empire off the back of a single question and a mobile phone and a sense of curiosity about human beings. Like, you're sitting down with Richard Branson, Mr. Beast. You have 17 million followers, no doubt ad revenue coming in, and it's a legitimate business. And I look at young people today and I keep trying to stress to them, yes, we had the real estate boomers, baby boomers. I'm not a boomer. I'm in the middle. I'm an Xer. But you guys, you kids have got the whole world literally at your fingertips. If you can just find what it is you're passionate about and amplify it. I mean, you must look at this journey and just go, I just started with literally being a champion for people's dreams, and look at where it's taken you. Like, could you speak to that? Because you've sort of, in a way, got a similar model to Mr. Beast in that you just amplified kindness. And these guys that go up and ask successful people, or, you know, nice car, what do? You know, like, it's a whole genre of kindness and commercial success is viable now.
I completely agree. I think that I hear all these doom and gloom statements, can't afford a house and all of these things. And it's true. You know, cost of living is crazy. But equally, you've got a supercomputer in your hand. Most people, of course, this isn't true for everyone, but you've got a supercomputer in your hand. Most people can get access to Wi-Fi one way or another. And you've got these live features. Like, I'm live right now on TikTok and Instagram. There's a couple of thousand people just listening on the live right now, right? It literally cost me nothing to press live. There's a couple of thousand people here, right? And so a couple of thousand people, if I asked them, hey, I've got a book out, would you go buy it? Or would you go buy my a squidgy toy and support my dream? And, you know, you can instantly be selling. And so, like, there's never been a time like this in history ever. And so I don't know how long before this loophole's closed, because, you know, I posted a video yesterday. It's already got 10 million views, and it cost me nothing but to film the video. So if you want to compete with the big companies, now is the time. And so, like, it's never been easier. And these big companies, by the way, really struggle with things like social media. I don't want to make social media the only answer, but like, these big companies really struggle with it. So if you're young and you understand social media and you've got a phone in your hand, yes, you're not going to be able to buy a house yet, but you are going to be able to start a business and own your time, which I think is more valuable. Like, I see my generation, a lot of people my age, right? I've got a friend who's a lawyer, and I don't want to offend him, but he doesn't see his kids, right? He owns a nice house. And he goes on two holidays a year, but he literally works from 6 a.m. till 10 p.m, selling hours as a lawyer. And so I think he's had to do that now because he's got lifestyle inflation. He's got this nice house, this lifestyle. He's stuck in that job and he has to sell time. And so as much as he might own a house, that house doesn't make you happy. What you do makes you happy. This is the irony. A house can trap you. So when people are talking about owning a house and it's so hard, I agree. But also, you can live anywhere. You can go anywhere. Flights have never been cheaper. Living elsewhere has never been easier. And you can have a phone in your hand and make content anywhere in the world, work from anywhere in the world. So, wow, I didn't have that option when I was 18 years old. If I could have jumped on a plane and cheap flight and gone somewhere hot instead of England and actually like started something, my God, what an opportunity. And so I agree with you. I think, you know, I don't want it to be, oh, come on, young people, you've got it easy. That's a bit unfair, because there's a lot of headwinds now. the university system traps people in a lot of debt. The cost of living is high. If you haven't got a parent that lets you stay at home, you know, it does get quite scary suddenly being in the real world and the costs of the real world. There's definitely some headwind that I didn't have when I was that age. I mean, like when I was 18 years old, a chocolate bar was cheap. You know, now a chocolate bar is quite expensive. Organic food was normal food. Now organic food is the expensive food. It's all spun around. So young people do have it hard in so many ways. But I agree with your sentiment. If they could just think about the positive that they've got and leverage it, then 20 years from now, young people will be saying, oh, God, it's all right for you. You had social media. You know, they didn't charge you for views. Now, every time I do a post, if I get a view, I have to pay a dollar. You know, like they'll be moaning about that. And so there'll be some new thing that people aren't taking advantage of.
Eric, while you load that question, I just want to make a comment for the young people listening to this. When you hear Simon talking about the big house with the unkept yard, change the picture to a big successful business with no creative energy at all and add AI to that picture. I see all these young people today that are making incredible AI videos for almost nothing and then starting drop shipping companies, and these videos go viral. Like I've seen these young guys running a Bitcoin merchandise store, and they're making these incredible parodies about Bitcoin and modern life, and they're going viral, and it's costing them nothing. Back in our day, it would have cost us hundreds of thousands or tens of thousands for that level of production. Over to you. That's just one example. It's the same thing. It's a service that yeah. Anyway,
I see. You know, there's more education at our fingertips than ever, right? With social media, podcasts, books. But there's a big thing of educating yourself and sitting on the sidelines. But there's a difference between taking action and actually implementing things. Like, I've got a lot of friends, acquaintances, family that are very well educated, but at the same time, don't take action and don't implement. Where do you're meeting thousands of people all the time. What are the difference between the ones that are actually taking action and implementing to the ones that aren't? Is there a common denominator? Because there'll be a lot of people sitting on the fence that are listening to this.
Yeah. So basically what happens if you want to take action, you need to change your mindset from wanting to be successful to needing to be successful. So a lot of people want it, but they don't need it. So for example, I see this a lot in quite successful people. They say they want to start a business, but they have to give up their job to do it. And they're like, well, I've got quite a comfortable life. My bills will get paid. I go on holiday once a year. So I've got this dream, but I'm not going to do it because they don't say it exactly like this, but I'm not going to do it because I don't need it. I want it, but I don't need it. And so when people need it, then they do it. And now need can come from two sources. The need can be literally like me. I needed my gardening company to work at that time because social services wouldn't help me. I couldn't get a job because I didn't have the required number to get a job. So I had to have that business work. I didn't have a choice. That's my only option. No other route, right? So that's one way where you have no route. The other way is where the problem that you're solving matters to you so much that you cannot stop. So I've been doing this now for 5 years. I'm going to be honest. I've had real low moments, really tired, overwhelmed with all the people that want help, feeling I'm not doing enough, even helping, you know, one or two people a day at least, still not enough. I feel like I'm just desperately feeling like, oh, my God, all these people I'm not helping. And I can't do this. I feel overwhelmed. And then I have these moments as well where people online hate me. People send me, you know, hateful messages. And you know, you're like, wow, what is the point of this? Why am I doing this? Have I got all this hate and all these people I can't help? Like, I'm overwhelmed. And then I try to sleep on it. And I always wake up generally the next day remembering the one person I have helped and the difference that would have made to me as a 15-year-old. You see, it's personal. And then like, I can't leave that 15-year-old me out there without support. I can't do it. And that's when it becomes not, I don't want to make my social media work. I need it to work. I can only help people with their dreams that social media gets their dream out there, right? I can't generate the money to give people money unless my social media makes money. I don't want to be successful. I need to be successful. I can't help the 15-year-old me unless I'm focused. And therefore, it takes my want and makes it a need. And that's what people don't do enough. They don't make it personal enough. So they don't have the need to do it.
Mm. It all starts with that dialogue, right? Like we had a coaching event recently, and one of the guys was telling me, he kept saying that I don't have time. I don't have time. Oh, I don't have time.
Big limiting belief.
Big limiting belief, right? And we all have them. But what happens is most people aren't aware of them. And he became aware. He listened to one podcast that we did, and he goes, Eric, one thing that you said in the podcast is dialogue. And now he's saying, I'm actually carving out time. I'm actually making time, right? Rather than saying, I have no time. And just that little change in dialogue for him has made a massive impact. You know, everyone is looking for this golden nugget, this golden answer of some kind, but really it could start with the smallest thing. Now, I want to ask a question because I've got two young girls, and they're not in a traditional school. They're in a Montessori style of school, which is they're quite entrepreneurial. And you've got where we live here, it's all about the private schools, the all boys schools, the all girls schools, and, you know, get their fancy sticker, put it on the back of the Range Rover so you can label what school they go to. Where do you feel like the school system is lacking and breaking down, in your opinion, at the moment?
So I home educate my son. He's 8 years old. I did have him in Montessori, and I have now taken him out and I home educate him. So I have a lot to say on this subject. I think the simple version of why the school system is broken starts at a very young age. I took my son to his first day at school when he was about 4 years old. And so I took him to a private school. And so this is meant to be, you know, a good school because it's private. It's meant that kind of pitch themselves as the best, right? And the first day at school, they let the parent sit with the child as the child gets used to the classroom, right? And I remember it so clearly, you know, just this is the problem with the education system. The teacher is lovely, awesome, just wants to teach the kids. And then all the kids are sitting there. My son is, you know, 4 years old with all these other four-year-olds. And then the first thing the teacher says is, welcome, welcome, kids. Okay, so your parents are here. Why don't you tell them, what do you want to do when you grow up? My four-year-old looks at me like, Daddy, what should I say? I want to make this teacher happy or meet all these kids. What should I say? He looks at me. I can see what he's saying. What should I say, Daddy? And he's like, look, and this is the beginning of what the education system does to young minds. It traps your mind into thinking you've got to come up with a thing you're going to do when you're older. A doctor, a lawyer. What is it going to be to make the adults in that room all happy, right? You've got a plan. And that's the problem. The education system should not ask that question, right? Parents shouldn't ask it of their kids. It traps you into a treadmill, a system that then you have to follow. The question to ask instead is, what problem do you want to solve when you grow up? Then your mind is open. You can think bigger. You can actually maybe have 9, 10 different careers. Who knows in 20 years' time what technology, what jobs are even available? A lawyer, even a doctor, could all be done by machines and AI anyway. So I think, you know, that to me is when I instantly thought, right, even private education is broken. Because there's this fundamental belief that somehow the school system is there to make you get a job at the end of it. And that, to me, is not what the education system is there to do. I want an education system to bring out the best in me. So another example is if you get a D in a particular subject, and I got a D in biology, for example, they wanted me to double down on biology and, like, figure out, you know, biology more. When I was like, well, I don't want to learn more about biology. I don't like it. That's why I'm getting a D in it. I want to focus on the thing I'm good at. I like communication. In my school, there was no arts. There was no theatre stuff, but I was a communicator, right? So I wanted to get better at that. I want to get better at communicating, but they're telling me I have to go study biology. Weird. The thing you're good at, they tell you don't need to practice as much and work on the thing you're bad at, which I think in the real world is the complete opposite. Like, I bring an accountant into every business I start because I'm not particularly good at numbers, so I always get a good accountant. And I'm not going to spend years learning accounts to get an A in it. I'm going to bring someone in who loves accounts and is good at it naturally. So I think, yeah, I mean, the school system to me, that's just one example of how it's broken. It teaches you to think about how, what job you're going to do when you grow up, instead of like what problem you can solve in the world, and open your mind up to thinking differently and thinking about what you love to do and applying it to the problem you see in the world.
When you look at any great leader or champion, like imagine saying to Tom Brady, you need to double down on your science studies at the expense of your outstanding football skills.
That's happening every day.
Yeah, exactly.
You're playing too much sport, you're not doing enough maths.
Yeah,
you know, guaranteeing every single day to talented athletes.
Everywhere in the real world, what gets rewarded is excellence at something. And it's hard to be excellent at something that you don't have a natural love for and so on.
100%. I mean, there's also a nuance to this. Like my son, he loves sword fighting. He's 8 years old and he just loves to have a little sword fight battle. And partly Star Wars, partly, you know, history. He just loves it. And so it doesn't sound like it's educational, right? You get out in the park and you sword fight. Right, okay, what's the education in that? Now, because he loves it, he has found out what Henry VIII's sword is and how much did it cost and how did Henry VIII get this sword made? So he's learning about engineering. He's learning about finance. He's learning about history. So all of these things that we want to teach people can come from your hobbies. Like I learned business. I love selling. I love marketing. But then because I want to build platforms and businesses around that, I've had to learn other things. And part of that is accounts, but I bring someone in. But I will learn these other things because I'm interested in that. I have a hobby thing. So that's why I always tell people, you know, follow your hobbies and you'll learn all the things you need to learn that will allow you to do your hobby.
Incredible. We teach at Unemployable. It's under our caps that Adam and I are wearing is idea capital execution, kind of the ICE model. And that's exactly what it's about, right? It's about that collaboration, right? You might have the idea and be the creative person, but you have no idea how to execute, or you don't have the capital to do it, and vice versa. Mm-hmm. And that's something similar in what you teach, in what we believe. Now,
100%.
You mentioned before about hacking luck and how luck can be engineered. How much do you think luck plays a role in regards to success or some of the successes that you have? Do you believe that luck and timing is an actual thing, or is it created?
So I spent a long time studying luck. When I first sold my company and I had nothing to do, I started writing down, how did I get here? How did I go from this 15-year-old homeless kid to this, you know, massive exit in a business? How did I do this? And I wrote down all the moments in which things happened that enabled that moment to happen for me. And a lot of them were luck. So I got a bit obsessed with luck. In fact, my first ever podcast that I did 5 years ago was called The Good Luck Club. Because I believe if you were in the luck club, you could be successful. And it's still true. And here's the thing I discovered. So 98% of your life is hackable luck. This is luck you can make happen. I'm going to explain how you make it happen in a sec. But 2% of your life, roughly 2% of your life, is random luck. So we probably all heard the saying, you know, the harder you work, the luckier you get, right? Well, if you're born in certain countries, your life is sometimes better. Just a fact. So how hard did you work to be in the right womb? You know, like being born in the right place. How hard did you work to do that exactly? You know, so there's definitely an element of random luck, but my kind of stats on it is around 2% of your life is that. Now, even if you're born into let's take a boxer that's born in the tough streets of New York, and he only becomes a successful boxer because he was born into that unlucky situation, because he had to fight in the streets to survive. He may never have even discovered he was a good boxer if that bad thing hadn't happened to him. Because it turns out that bad luck and good luck are still both luck. How you portray that moment. When I failed in my businesses, of course, I have a moment of self-pity. Oh, my business failed. You know, I was unlucky, wrong partner, wrong economic situation. Or I can look at it like, wow, that learning there helped me eventually be successful. If I wasn't a failure there, I wouldn't be a success now. Right? So you can view luck in different ways. But the 98% luck that you can have, there's basically three elements to it. One is you've got to know your destination. If you know where you're going, luck tenfold. Two, you got to take risk. It's not the luckier you get, the harder you work, the luckier you get. It's the more risk you take, the luckier you get. That's the truth. Because I tell you, when I worked less hard towards the end of my career, when before I sold Fluid, I had someone else running that company and I was making the most money I'd ever made. So I wasn't working harder. I was working less hard. I brought in talent to run it for me. So this working hard thing is a slight, there's nuance to it. Okay. But taking risk 100%, the more risk you take, the luckier you get. That is 100% true. And the third thing is, like, I think it's purpose. Like, what is the point of it all? Why are you doing it? And if you have a purpose, your luck increases. Why? Because you can be persistent. You can follow through. And that often leads to more luck. I'm lucky on social media. I get 500 million views plus a month. I get more views on my channel than the BBC. I've been lucky. But I have also posted every day for 5 years. Every day. So yeah. I was persistent. And how was I able to be persistent? Because I don't want to let the 15-year-old me down. I want to make sure the person I needed help at 15, I didn't have. And I have to make sure that's there for someone every single day. So that's given me purpose, and that makes me persistent, and that makes me lucky. And if you follow those three things, I have discovered you get more luck.
Do you feel, Simon, like this is getting a little bit woo-woo maybe, but you know, there's a force that is looking to be expressed in the world, and it's looking for a willing expressor. Like, for example, there's a kindness that's hunting to be expressed, and then the person who steps up and shows up and consistently, just when you look back, and I've had a similar thing to a smaller degree in my own life, okay, man, it's just that, like you said, you've got to know where you're going, and you knew that you wanted to speak into people's lives with a simple question and inspire them beyond their story to take action. And then it seems like the universe kind of conspired, time, fate and circumstances sort of put some wind in the sails maybe. Do you feel that way? Like there's sort of this other force that's maybe like, here's a dude that's implementing and now we're going to give him more because he's expressing. And it seems to me that may have sort of happened. I can't explain it myself, but I'm not a religious person, but I've kind of experienced it.
Yeah, I mean, I think about this thing you're talking about quite a lot. So I have a wacky theory, which is 100,000 people all get downloaded the same idea in one day. Mm. And it's like an experiment to see who goes out there and actions it. So there's that. I mean, if you look at like history of innovation, you see like Google, for example, were not the first search engine. There was thousands of search engines, you know. These ideas all come to people at once, and then some people execute it better than others, just part of the game. But I also think that there's another element to it, which is like, what is the purpose of it all? What is the purpose of life? And so, you know, I think the purpose of life is a life of purpose in a simple way, but there's something else. And that is like, we're kind of taught this model of give and take from quite a young age. Like, I'll help you if you help me. And it's almost acceptable, right? It's quite normal now, but it's not our natural way. See, we used to live in tribes, so 500 people. And if someone's tent fell down, the first thing I would say to them is not, oh, I'll charge you to fix your tent, mate. No, I'm not helping you unless you pay me. The first thing I'd say is, oh my God, your tent fell down. Let's get that up. John in the village, he's good at this stuff, isn't he? Get him in to help it. Oh, and you can stay at my tent until this tent's fixed. Don't worry about it. You know, like that's our natural instinct. Okay, but because of the tax man and you know, wanting a transaction on everything and being able to track that income, it's all become quite normal that there's a transaction here, right? Where's the money? How do I tax it? And actually, I've discovered myself the last 5 years is that give and take is a artificial structure, I think partly structured by the tax man to make everything a transaction so they can make money out of it. But the way we are natural as humans is give without take. And actually, I'm happiest, I don't know about your listeners, but I'm happiest when I help someone and I don't have any expectation of anything back. So I saw a few days ago, someone opened a door for someone and that person walked through the door and they went, well, don't say thank you then. And I thought to myself, you've made yourself annoyed. You did something nice. You opened the door for someone and then you made yourself annoyed that they didn't give you the reaction that you expected. All you've done is made yourself miserable. What is the point? Why not just do that nice thing and not have any expectation? If they say thank you to you, great. If they don't, it's like, you did a nice thing. And I think humans, we need to get back to that, like just give without take. And I think that's my spiritual version of this. It's like, just go back to our factory settings, not what society's kind of told us. Or, you know, no good deed goes unpunished. There's so many lines that try to stop you from just being your natural self. You know, well, what do you mean no good deed goes unpunished? What do you mean? Well, I lent that person money and then now they avoid me. Well, did you expect something back from them? Did you expect interest? Did you expect them to do something for you because you lent them money? Did you put pressure on them? You know, or did you just give them the money and say, I love you, there's the money? No.
Mr. Beast is a great example of that, where he blew up when he gave the $10,000 cash to the homeless guy and filmed it. And that was it. And they're like, why? What are you doing this for? He's like, I'm just doing it because I think it's cool. That started this incredible story and inspired many more people like him. But I kind of have this theory as I've gotten older that the universe, God, whatever, and I'm not a religious person, but I've found that the more I give like that, like what you do for a living, the more it just seems to come and it just doesn't stop. And I don't know what it is. I just thought you might have some insights as well. So thanks for sharing.
No, it's so true. Yeah, it's so true. I mean, I've spent the last 5 years trying to not charge people for help. I've never charged anyone for help. And I found that just I can't stop the money pouring in. I went to Dubai recently. They gave me $1 million US cash because they like what I'm doing. Didn't ask me to sign anything. Didn't ask for anything in return. Just like, we like what you're doing. There's $1 million, you know. And so it's just mind blowing. And I think I for the last 5 years, I've been financially in a position where I can run this experiment, where I don't need anything back from anybody, right? So I'm very privileged. But I've also discovered what I kind of knew anyway. This is, the more you help people, the more your life gets better. So even on a small scale, anyone listening right now, everyone's got 5 minutes, rich or poor. You've got 5 minutes today where you could help one person and not need anything back. And if you do it, you'll be mind blown what will actually happen to your life. First of all, you'll probably sleep better because it's in us naturally. We feel good. We did something good, you know, like, and I don't think people realize this. And so I've been lucky enough. I made a load of money and then I could go out there in the world and help people and not need anything back. And that has been amazing because I've discovered, oh my God, like by doing this, you get so much back and you don't ask for it, but it comes your way. That's why you chase money, it runs away. That type of model, right?
If you don't follow Simon, guys, follow his Instagram account and watch how simple it is just to go up and see somebody. I've said it so many times. People are dying to be seen. And if you see them and just speak some positivity and love into their life, what comes back to you is profound by just 100%. Giving it away. Eric.
I'm going to be in Australia soon, by the way. So if any of your listeners want to
hang
out, I'm in Australia in October. And I think there'll be a link somewhere around here.
Is it October or November, Simon? Like, I was going to.
October.
Okay, the notes I got here.
It is October. That's my plan. It might change. Who knows? But for me at the moment, it's October.
It's good that you said that, because in the notes I got here, I've got dates for November. So we better clarify that, because I was going to put it in at the top. But we might just want to get somebody in the background to check, because the dates I've got here are November dates and I want to make sure we read them out correct. So I'll have a look quickly, Eric, while you ask a question.
Yeah, well, anyway, for people listening, there'll be a link around here to it, wherever we're
based,
October or November. But I'm pretty sure it's October. But I might be wrong because I'm tired.
That's all right. I'm going to double check, because we want to get as many people to your events. They're going to be in Auckland, Brisbane, Melbourne, Sydney, and Perth, guys. So make sure you get along.
They have the dates. Yeah.
I'm just going to look it up now.
One of the reasons I'm doing that Australia tour, by the way, a huge part of my audience is in Australia. So a lot of Dream is in Australia, and I haven't been there and asked people their dream. And I really want to get loads of dreamers in the room helping each other. So I'm going to be doing a big events each location. I want people to come into the room and like connect with other dreamers, because one of the things people think, you can't make it on your own. There are no self-made millionaires and billionaires. Whoever says that in their bio is lying. There's no self-made. We all had a bit of help, right? And that can come from community. My dog's agreeing in the background. Sorry, everybody.
Simon, just to show how busy you are actually here in November, according to the website.
Am I there?
So it's November. It's November 3rd in Auckland, and then the 5th in Brisbane, and then 10, 12, and 14 for the rest of the
Yeah, you're right. Stuff. I'm totally losing track of time.
If you have time while you're here, Simon, it would be great to get you in the studio where I'm at now. We've got a purposely built podcast studio that we built for people like you to come and visit us and get you in the actual room. So it would be great to
see if we can make it work. I know the schedule's going to be tight.
Yeah, it would be. The speaking about help, right? Like Adam approached me, I don't know, now probably 2.5 years ago or so about this project that we have, and we had no idea in regards to commercialization. We just started it and we've been helping, right? With no really commercialization around how's this thing gonna actually, you know, earn money. And let me tell you, what you're saying is so true, because the amount of opportunity that has come from just that abundant mindset of helping and giving is an actual real thing. And I've always been that guy, right, that is referring someone or introducing someone to someone else. I'm the guy that's in the, you know, Kohl's or Woolies car park on a Sunday when it's packed and I'm seeing, you know, 2-3 people looking for a car park, and I wave one guy down, and you know, that makes me happy, right? And I've always been that type of person. For whatever reason, I have no idea, but this has been kind of a roller coaster ride of emotion, because I've always started things with a commercialization point of view. How do I set up this business, and how do I make money, right? Mm-hmm. And that goes with that purpose over profit model that you really speak about, right? So I want to go back to that purpose, because when people think I'm going to start a business, straight away the first thing they think about mostly is money. How am I going to make money? How do I make money, rather than solving the problem or what is the purpose? So I watched recently on one of your videos when you went up to this girl and she was a fitness girl, and then you were chatting with her and you're like, something happened when she was 11 years old. And I'm like, and then you just basically opened that up for her and then said, this is your purpose. It's through fitness and these types of things. How can people sit here and find out what their actual purpose is? What work can they do? What questions can they ask themselves? Because it's all good saying, find your purpose. And then, okay, that's that. Read it in the book. What are some actual tools? What are some actionable items that we can give some of these viewers to actually go deep and actually find purpose? What are a few questions?
So it's how to find purpose. I actually wrote a whole chapter in my book about this. It's quite a deep subject and quite complicated, depending on the people and their stages. I think the first thing people need to make sure they're not in fight or flight. If you're in fight or flight, your imagination part of your brain, the creative part of your brain, which is where the dream lives, cannot activate. Because if you're busy, like a lion's coming towards you, it's going to eat you. That's what fight or flight is. You know, you've got bills to pay at the end of the month. You know, you've got people chasing you down. You're working all the time. You've got to get your mind out of fight or flight. And so you can do it through, you know, meditation. Ironically, you can do it through helping other people. You can do it by just telling yourself you've got abundance, like you've got all the money you need. Don't worry. Just to come out of fight or flight for 10, 15, 20 minutes to allow your brain to dream. Okay. Now, I actually think 50% of the population globally are in fight or flight. So the idea of a dream isn't even possible. They've just got to pay their bills. They've got to get through the day. You know, the amount of people tell me to piss off when I try to interview them, they're often in fight or flight. They're running past me. They don't have any opportunity. They've got to get to work. And so first step is ask yourself, how can you come out of fight or flight? If you're not in fight or flight, or you've come out of fight or flight, the second thing to ask yourself, I think, is like, who inspires you? What out there, what problem out there bothers you? And really try to apply your skill set, like write down the things that you're good at and try to get great at them. You know, good is the enemy of great, right? So don't just be good at something, try to be great at something. Now, I am probably one of the best in the world at marketing at this point. And so, but I've spent 30 years doing it. And so I've dedicated myself to knowing everything there is about marketing. The great thing about marketing is it's always evolving. TikTok gets invented. Oh my God. You know, now we've got a new thing, right? So it's like, I think being good at something that you love being good at. And then I think just put a business model behind those things. So if it's a problem you're solving, what's the business model? If it's a hobby you love doing, you just want to figure out how to make money, put a business model behind it. Now, I also launched a podcast and spent 2.5 years doing a podcast without any income, and I could afford to do it. I actually look back and think that was a mistake, right? You guys should build a commercial model. Maybe you have now, but you should, because it makes it sustainable, because you're going to need to bring people in to help you. And you know, you need to scale it so that it's not intense on you for the long term. So I think, you know, certainly if you can afford to like build something without income, great. But why? You know, I think for profit, for good businesses are the future. And so I reckon that's how you can also beat the big boys, because they're not for profit, for good. Amazon is not for profit, for good. Google is not for profit, for good. So if you want to compete with them, you could build a for profit, for good. I'd rather use your products. So that's an opportunity for your listeners as well, right? So I think, yeah, to round it out, it's like, think, get out of fight or flight, figure out what you love to do, and just get really good at the thing you love to do and outsource everything else, and then focus on a problem that bothers you, and either go join the people that are doing that too and get equity where they're doing it, or build something yourself that solves a problem that bothers you. And if you, all of this advice doesn't help you, go hang out with someone with purpose. Go hang out with people that are on a mission, because you'll see it. You'll see what it looks like and you'll feel it. It's infectious. You can't work normally again once you work with someone that's with purpose. It's too exciting. And if you go work in a normal job where it's all about the money, you're going to feel so different to when you've worked with someone who's got a purpose. You see their drive. Like, I've never worked so hard as I'm working right now. I'm going to fix the education system. It's different. You need to see it for yourself. So if you don't know what purpose is, go see people that have got it. Try to hang out with them. Try to be near them. It will infect you, because it changes you once you have it.
That's amazing, Simon. There's so much in there. There's one video I watched of yours that perfectly articulates the price of being in fight or flight, which was this guy who walked past you and you stopped him, and he was on his way to pick his daughter up or something, and you offered him £2,000 to just talk to him, and he was so caught up in what he had to get to that he walked away, A, from a guy who's a multimillionaire with 17 million followers, connected to people globally, has resources and wants to help. You just walked past that. He literally stopped you in the street as if God sent down an angel and said, here's some an answer to your problem. So caught up in the story that he just walked away, and he even walked away from the £2,000 that you literally offered him right there on the spot, because he was so intent and entranced in the narrative of his own life. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's so powerful and profound sometimes how expensive just not being just being in that grind can be. It's just amazing to me.
That particular example you're talking about, by the way, there, I find that one quite fascinating too, because people, first of all, I'm just a guy bothering someone, in fairness to that guy, right? He's on his way to do stuff. And so I'm bothering him. I actually understand that. I think in his particular case as well, that particular video, I think about that one quite a bit, because he's on his way to pick up his kid. So this is actually very important. I've got a kid. I know how important that is to me, right? Nothing's more important than my kid, to be honest. Nothing. Certainly not talking to some guy on the street. He's on his way to pick up his kid, right? I think what is interesting is sometimes how we blame our kids for not following our dreams. So we say, I've got kids, or I've got to go do this thing with my kid. I think, see, I look at it like my kid will do what I do. So if I want my kid to grow up with dreams, and we all want our kids to dream, right? We always want our kids to think big. But I'm not following my dream. What example am I setting? I actually think it's more harmful for you not to follow your dream than you to just say that you're not doing it because you've got kids and you don't want to take a risk, right? I believe kids don't do what you say. They do what you do. And so I think about that clip that you're talking about quite a lot, because I think, like, I get his instinct to go and pick up his kid, but I also sensed that he wasn't following his dream, and there could have been a moment to help him do that, which might have been okay. I don't know how tight he was picking up his kid. Didn't feel like it was a huge rush. Otherwise, he wouldn't want to stop talk at all with me. He did stop and talk for a second, so it wasn't a huge rush. So I think to myself, you know, his child's future could have been very different because his father's following his dream. And so, you know, that's to me, like, you know, sliding doors, isn't it? Like,
it is, Simon. And the reason I brought that particular one up is about a year or two ago, I adopted a global belief in my life that the universe or whatever is trying to bring me opportunities. I've just got to listen. And I've got to listen for those little whispers and those little doors that open. And the moment I adopted that as a core belief, oh, my God, the whole world came alive with moments like that where I was I had some really good stuff happen to me a few weeks ago. And then I got a random text from some people in Sri Lanka that I visited years ago who at an orphanage, and they needed money. And I was busy. I was like, no. I didn't click who it was, and then I just sort of moved on with my day, and then went, hang on a second. That was one of those little moments you got to go back to. And I went back to them and I said, listen, what do you need? And we got it done. But it was just, it's really tuning into and thinking, if you have that belief that the world is trying to bring you goodness and is trying to make things happen, you'll be amazed at how much more opportunity you start to notice. And the impact, as you put it, on that guy and perhaps his kid's life could have been profoundly different had he had that core belief and just stopped and goes, hang on, this could be the guy that has been waiting for.
I think
me,
it's really tricky, isn't it? Again, you're people in fight or flight, they're too busy.
Totally.
Like, the imagination part of their brain where it's like, whoa, this could be an opportunity for me, isn't there. That part of the brain does not get activated. And
people are in so much stress, Simon.
I'm out of fight or flight. I mean, the other side of what
I've never heard somebody say.
The other side of what you're saying. Sorry,
go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, like, you know, if you think you're lucky, you'll be lucky.
Yes.
It's also that a lot of people think they're unlucky, and that causes them a huge amount of pain, because every time something unlucky happens, it reinforces their belief that they're unlucky. And when something lucky happens, they almost don't even notice it.
Yeah.
And then they don't think they're lucky. And then they don't take risk, because they're like, oh, I'm always very unlucky. I don't take risk. And then it becomes a self-fulfilling truth that you are not lucky.
And the inverse as well.
Mm.
People who believe they're lucky and something good happens, they tend to attract more good vibes because they're feeling good and stuff starts to come their way.
I had a comic book business that failed. And at the time I thought I was unlucky. Later I realized I was very lucky that business failed.
Yeah.
I had the wrong business partner in that business. So luckily it failed. You know, it was linked in the end to Harvey Weinstein. I'm glad I'm not in business with him. You know, like but at the time, I thought I was bad luck. I thought, oh, I put all this effort into this comic book business and it hasn't worked. You know, failure is also good luck. Again, people need to see it as good luck and realize that, you know, trying things and failing and it all happens for a reason. It's good luck. It's good luck.
Yeah. And I think another thing, too, is following through, right? Like, how many people do you catch up with or, you know, people that you meet, you're like, hey, let's catch up. Yeah. And then nothing happens. Right. Like literally take the action, send the invite, make it happen, whether it's a lunch, whether it's a dinner, whether it's a meeting, whether it's a connection. Hey, I'll introduce you to that person. And then you never hear from them ever again. Right. Sometimes it's just that one thing of following through on what you're actually going to do and what you actually said that to someone that you're going to do and itemize that and take note of that. And that's something that I've become, I think, in my opinion, quite good at, is if I'm going to be introducing someone or, you know, going for a meeting. We did it just this past weekend. We were at an event. We had a big event and one of our business partner's wife said, oh, we got to catch up, you know, like all of us, you know, with your wife. And I'm like, you message her right now and organize it. It was done that day. The next following Saturday, which is the Saturday just passed, there's six of us going out for dinner and having a great time and great conversation. It's just nipping it in the butt there and then.
Yeah, Simon, couldn't agree more. I mean, that's why I say start.
Simon,
yeah.
I agree completely.
Go on, slight delay, Adam. Go on. Sorry, I'm talking over you.
Go ahead. No, mate. I was just going to say, I know you've got to go out. You've got a deadline. We don't want to hold you from your family dinner. But I was just going to say, to take us out, Simon, like, what would you say somebody right now is on their way to a job that they hate? They're trapped. They are in fight or flight. They're feeling like they have no options. What would just be in one concise outtake for them before we do the wrap up? What would Simon Squibb say to that person?
I'd have to know more about them, but my kind of statement would be, I have so much respect for someone who perhaps going out there doing a job they hate to provide for their family. I really have a lot of time for people like that. And I get that a lot of the time we make ourselves a martyr and we say, this is the way it has to be. I have to go and do this job, especially if you've got kids. But it's not true. You don't have to be a martyr. You can enjoy your work. And with the mobile phone in your hand and all the things we've got available in this world right now, you deserve to enjoy what you do. Now, enjoying what you do should also link to having financial freedom. Why shouldn't you have it? A bit of education, a bit of self-reflection, maybe a bit of a pushback on the job you hate and try and turn it into a job you love. That's a good first step, isn't it? You know, or just, you know, build up a bit of savings and figure out something you'd love to try and do because you don't want to live with regret later in life. And please don't blame your kids for not following your dreams, right? Because your kids will copy you. They'll do exactly what you're doing now. They won't follow their dreams. They'll think they're meant to do a shit job because that's what you had to do. Show them there's a better way. For you, do it for you and do it for them. And if you love what you do, then never buy my book. You don't need it. But if you don't love what you do, there is ways to break free, you know, like there are. And a lot of it is in your own mind. Yes, you need a plan. You can't maybe just quit straight away. You've got to plan it. I know that there's steps to it, depending on how complicated your life is. But for God's sake, don't waste this incredible life you've got doing something you don't love every day. That's all you should be focused on, is making sure you enjoy what you love to inspire your children and your friends and you.
Yeah, fantastic. Fantastic. Simon Squibb, thank you so much for coming on the pod. Thank you for amazing work and the love and light that you are putting out into the world, man. It's inspiring. And we wish you every success in continuing to make people unemployable. It's just fantastic. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, guys. Well, I'll see you in Australia very soon. Look forward to it.
Yeah, absolutely. See you soon.
Yeah, look forward to it. See ya.
Hey there. I hope you enjoyed that episode of Unemployable. If you'd like to watch another episode, just click there.